Dead man. The rain had quit by the time Tricia was ready to leave and head back to Magnolia. She was a little bit surprised that the man who called himself Harry King came out with her to load the boxes in the back of her car. She thought he would be a lot more careful about being seen, since he was on the radar of both the police and whatever remained of the Ross family. "Get these boxes somewhere safe," he instructed her. "There are people who would do whatever it would take to get their hands on what's in there." She gave him one of her business cards, telling him to call her if anything came up. He, in turn, handed her an envelope. "Inside you'll find contact information on a couple of people. One of them, Tom White, used to work in the Ross brothers' houses down near the river across from Cincinnati. The other belongs to a mutual friend of ours. When you see him, call me." Tricia thanked him and headed back out on the main highway and eventually to home. Within a few minutes, she arrived at an intersection where she could drop south to catch the back roads. Before signaling a turn, she looked in her rearview mirror. Behind her was a pickup truck she swore she might have seen following her between Hillsboro and Rainsboro. Instead of turning, she went straight ahead, picking up her speed a little bit. The truck was pacing her, roughly 500 feet behind. She opened her throttle even more. After 10 miles, she finally lost the truck. Coming out of Bainbridge, she took a side road, which would take her into Fuller County by a slightly different route. Except for the occasional farmer running an errand, she had the road mostly to herself the rest of the way into Magnolia. When she arrived at the back door of Zeke's Cafe, Glenn had already gone home. In his place, she was surprised to see Harold Richmond in his police car parked out by the back door. "I was told you might need some protection," he explained when he approached her. "Someone called here from the Lawrence County Sheriff's Office telling me that you had a couple of boxes of documents you needed to take upstairs for safekeeping." He took one of the boxes out of the car and followed her up to the radio station on the second floor. They stored both boxes in a recess of the office she shared with Glenn. On her way back down the stairs to go home, she ran into Jean Minnie. "Did you happen to run into the excitement in Highland County when you were out this afternoon?" he inquired. "What happened?" "The Highland County Sheriff's Office took an old man from Rainsboro calling himself Harry King. They say he was someone named Quentin Russell. And get this, Phil Farmer was in on the arrest, claiming that it was his intelligence which led to the arrest." "Holy crap," she muttered. She turned right around to literally sprint back up to Glenn's office. The desk phone was already ringing when she got there. She answered it to hear Sheriff Roy's voice on the other end. "Thank goodness you picked up," he told her. "I was going to give you a heads up that the Highland County Sheriff's Office called. Sheriff Hill told me that he and Philip Farmer picked up Quentin Russell." "Jean just told me," she said out of breath. "I was just leaving the station when he caught me on the back stair." "What I'd like to know is how the hell this happened and how did Farmer get in on the arrest? I'm afraid that once word gets out the Farmer was involved, my chances for re-election go from slim to none." Tricia took a deep breath. "Roy, I've just come back from Highland County after talking with the man they arrested. Somehow or another, I'm afraid I had become the Judas goat." She heard a gasp and saw Jean in the doorway. "The best thing for you to do now is call the highway patrol and let them know about Quentin Russell. The man could be in mortal danger. Sheriff Hill wants revenge for his sister being taken away by Johnny Ross's family. He thinks that Quentin Russell is responsible. Meanwhile, the Ross family may be after Russell for money he stole from them. It's a long story, trust me. The best thing you can do right now is to get the highway patrol and let them in on what's happening. I'll see if I can get Greg over there to pull some strings to the local judge. Maybe the best place for Quentin Russell, at least until we can get some things straightened out, is right here in Fuller County. He gave me some documents which may prove his innocence. Trust me, Roy." Roy promised to be on the case as soon as possible. Tricia thanked him, then turned her attention to Jean. "You talked to Quentin Russell this afternoon?" he said, with his mouth wide open. "Yes, I did," she answered. "I have boxes of information in the closet over there which may prove his innocence." She then called Greg Fisher and let him know what had happened. "Bring Elsie Kendall down here and put her up at the Blue and Gray in the station's account," Tricia implored. "No one, I repeat, no one is to know who she really is until I get around to sorting this mess out, she ordered. Greg assured her that he was on his way and would swing back to Hillsboro once Elsie was secured to keep up the pressure on Sheriff Hill. While she was talking to Greg, she fumbled on the Rolodex in Glenn's desk, hoping to find a phone number for the Lawrence County Sheriff's Office. The number was in her hand when she finished her phone call to Greg. Within a minute, she was talking to the Lawrence County Sheriff. "I can't say I've ever heard of a deputy named Brown," he drawled after she asked him about the missing son of Jim and Nadine Brown. "Does this have anything to do with what happened up in Highland County a little over an hour ago?" "I can't say that it is. What happened, if I might ask?" she said, feigning innocence. "Nothing, nothing at all, little lady," he said, just before cutting the connection. "And fuck you too, Sheriff," she cursed at the phone before or after hanging it up. She pulled out her cell phone to call Glenn to let him know what was going on. Before she could turn it on, it rang. The number was unfamiliar to her, but she took the call anyway.
"Patricia Knox Michaels?
My name is David Brown, and I need to talk with you."
Tricia could hardly believe her ears.
"A friend of ours is in trouble and we need your help," the caller continued. "We need to meet somewhere, say at Ding's and Prentice, in half an hour or so."
"Sure, sure," she stammered.
"Bring your husband, or have him meet us."
He was off the line almost as quickly as he came on. She called Glenn and had him promise to meet them. As a precaution, she called Sheriff Roy and invited him along, too. "I want you along, too, Jean," she told her newsman. "I don't know if the story's going to break tonight, but in case it does, I want you to record it." David. Tricia was concerned about meeting with a person who identified himself as David on the telephone. If he was an imposter, would she be endangering herself just by meeting him? Her heart started beating a little bit faster when she settled into the driver's seat of her Mustang to head up to Prentice. She hesitated just a moment before turning her ignition switch. What if the car's been rigged with a bomb, she thought. If a bomb had been wired to her car, the bomber would have done it while she was in Rainsboro talking with Quentin. Or would it? Rainsboro seemed a lot like Jumpstart. Neighbors looked after each other. Her car would have come under intense scrutiny from unseen eyes at the moment she got off the highway. They would have seen her get out. They would have seen if someone else was trying to monkey with it. There was no problem. There was no sinister vehicle following her between Magnolia and Prentice. The pickup truck parked almost nose-to-nose with Sheriff Roy's personal car reminded her of the truck which followed her out of Rainsboro earlier in the day. She made a quick note of the license plate number while she waited for Glenn. He arrived less than a minute later. "Have you seen this person yet?" he asked when she came to greet him coming out of his car. "No, but there's a truck parked by Roy's which looks like a truck that followed me earlier today," she informed him. They took a collective deep breath before plunging into Ding's. The first thing they saw was Roy talking with the same man who hung off to the side of Betty Worry's funeral. Sheriff Roy motioned for Tricia and Glenn to join them. "Is this the gentleman you came here to meet?" Roy asked. "If you're referring to David Brown, yes," Tricia answered. David extended his hand. "I assume that it's been you who have been following me," she accused. "Yes, and for your own good, Mrs. Michaels," he responded. "For the record, I'm not the only one who's been watching your digging around lately. There are others watching you, too. They're not happy about what you've been finding." "This afternoon we learned that Quentin Russell was picked up by the Highland County Sheriff. He's certainly no threat to anyone as far as I've been able to tell," she stated. "He is to those who call themselves Russell's men," David informed her. "He was their scapegoat, someone who they could blame for their crimes if any of them were ever caught. Right now, Russell's men are caught in a bind. They still need him as a scapegoat, but since he's in custody, they're afraid that he'll tell everything he knows about them." "The only problem I see is he has no backup," Roy pointed out. "All he has is his word. He can't back up anything he says." Quentin Russell has boxes of incriminating evidence which would prove that he was innocent in most of the cases for which he took the blame. David looked directly at Tricia when he made his statement, as if to say, "You should know. You have them." "Would Russell's men know where they would find those documents if they existed?" Glenn jumped in, not knowing that Tricia had hidden them in their shared office. "That's a good question," said David. "They might suspect that your wife would have them. She did, after all, take 2 boxes of documents out of Quentin Russell's house this afternoon. And yes, Mrs. Michaels, that was me following you." "So, should I take those boxes back to Highland County in the morning?" she asked. "It would be better if you were to take those documents somewhere where they cannot be found until they're needed. You will be followed. You will be watched." "Where do I take the documents when I leave here?" "Head towards Lexington," he advised her. "But be prepared to drive another hour or more before heading back home." "Are you trying to use my wife as bait?" Glenn asked. "That's a general idea. Sheriff Hill and Candidate Farmer used her as a Judas goat. We can just as well use her as a diversion to keep the papers safe. The papers she has are only part of the whole body of documentation which will bring down the empire the Ross brothers and Lou Gilbert created." "Aren't most of the people dead involved, dead by now?" Roy looked puzzled. "Sheriff, the Ross brothers and Lou Gilbert came from a long line of people who operated on the outskirts of the law, and their converts and their sons and their daughters are still operating today. Betty Worry was a victim of the Ross brothers as much as my sister Sally was. They were out of the white slavery business for a while, but they went back in because they felt as if they could do it without the interference they ran into back in the late 60s. Quentin and my daddy are too old to keep the Ross clan in check. And with Zeke gone, the heirs of the original Ross brothers thought that moving back into their old business ventures would be a cakewalk." "Zeke Collins?" Glenn asked. "How did he figure into things?" "Zeke caught on to what was happening almost from the moment Mom was killed. He used his influence and his radio show to call attention to what was going on. He helped keep Daddy's whereabouts secrets and helped to engineer my death." Tricia was hit by a sudden thought. "You, your father, Zeke and Jessica Collins were all working together?" she asked. David smiled and nodded. "And you were the angel who came to my rescue when I was a little girl?" "Yes, Patricia. That was me." Tricia Michaels' mouth was wide open. David Brown had been her protector, and he was still on the job. David pulled his cell phone out of his pocket and checked the time. "I've overstayed my welcome," he told everyone. "You go ahead and have dinner. I'm going to run back to the place I've been staying to get ready for tomorrow. I'll call you later on to give you some specifics as to where you'll need to go, Mrs. Michaels. Stay safe." He left somewhat abruptly, leaving Roy, Glenn, and Tricia alone to proceed to a table to eat dinner. "These papers David was talking about, do you still have them?" Glenn asked after Roy left to head back to his office. "They're at the station in our office," she told him. "I'd feel safer if they were with us." Glenn offered to recover the papers from the office while she went home to wait out the night. David called Tricia, as promised, shortly after 9. "Where are you?" she asked. "Close. But not too close," he responded. "I need to let you in on a couple of things. First of all, your car has been rigged with a tattler. That way they can keep track of you without having to physically follow you." "How long has the tattler been in place?" Tricia asked. "It was put there when you went to visit my brother over in Lebanon. The Ross brothers own several guards there. They like to keep track of any and all of his visitors. Your background gives you a high profile. Your visit to Mr. King drew attention to him. Attention that he didn't need. As for the trip you're about to take, you're going to eventually head to Elizabethton, Kentucky, where you'll swap cars with a private investigator who will take your vehicle to Hopkinsville. The ruse should work. They know that you have the papers, and if your car is in Hopkinsville, they'll think the papers are there as well. It will at least pull the attention away from you. From Elizabethton, you'll need to go back to Maysville to talk with Tom White. I'll email you details in the morning. After that, you'll come back here. By the time you get here, I'll have collected the remaining papers you'll need to put the Ross brothers out of business." "Is that all?" "That's pretty much it until tomorrow. Wait, do you have a few minutes so we can talk? She asked.
Sure.
Why not? I need to know what happened back in 1967. What did you see the morning your parents disappeared? There was a long pause on the other end. Tricia almost thought he hung up on her. I watched Joey Ross kill my mother. He paused again. I watched him and his son Gilbert take my mother's body and put it in the back of his cruiser. He paused again. Joey Ross is still alive, Mrs. Michaels, and so is Gilbert. Are you trying to get revenge, David? If I wanted revenge for my mother's death, I'd have opened up and shot those sons of bitches right then and there. I had a loaded rifle with a 10-round magazine pointed at Joey's head. I could have pulled the trigger if my daddy hadn't eased the gun from me. He said later that if I had have acted, Sheriff Ross would have had us both in jail and Sally would have gone to the houses in Kentucky for certain. When this is all over, and it will be over soon, Mrs. Michaels, we will have justice. Revenge may be swift and it may be sweet, but justice lasts longer and is just as delicious.